Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you? Glad to have you on tonight. Yeah,
I was
very pleased when Cheryl called me and told me you were coming to the area. Where exactly are you going to be in Torrington, and when?
Oh, that's a great question. I have that information. I'll be pulling it up as we speak. Until then, though, your listeners should know that we're starting at the New Jersey Institute of Technology with a class that local engineer Tony Zambodi and I, I'm an architect of 28 years, you might have mentioned already, I just got on. We're going to be presenting to a forum, a little bit of a debate with the civil engineering department heads. Here and their students are coming. It's a very exciting opportunity for us to present science-based information about the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. So I'm looking forward to sharing with people in Torrington how that went. And we then go down to New Brunswick, and then we're in Woodstock, New York, and then over to Torrington. And after Torrington, we have Greenfield, and then Massachusetts, and then Brattleboro, Vermont, over to Worcester, and then Boston, up to Dover, New Hampshire, on up to Portland, Maine, for a couple of events up there, and then over to Lebanon. So it's a big couple of weeks for us.
That's
very exciting.
Sure. Are you finding there's more interest in it now, or more acceptance of the inside job, if you will, than there was?
Well, and we don't know that it was an inside job. All the evidence suggests such a thing, but since we don't have proof as to who is responsible, what their exact motivations were, how they got away with all of this, how these explosives were set in these buildings, that's all speculation. We stick with the science-based forensic evidence and eyewitness testimony and video testimony that is very, very clear to prove that not just the Twin Towers, but this third skyscraper, World Trade Center Building 7, fell at free-fall acceleration straight down uniformly, symmetrically, into its own footprint on the afternoon of 9/11.
I believe I wanted to say, because I think this you did this on was it New Year's, or it was around the Christmas season or New Year's, last year, you had the collapse of the video of the collapse of the trade centers on the played against the side of a major skyscraper in Times Square. Is that correct?
Yes, we certainly did. This was a $30,000 effort.
I was very pleased to see that, and I was very surprised that you didn't get more reaction to that. How did it play in Peoria? You know.
Peoria.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how did it play around the country? How did it play?
We have a lot of.
How did it play in Peoria? Yeah.
I see. I've never heard that phrase. That's funny. I have been to Peoria, actually. We gave a presentation there, so I should have picked up on that, Leo. I'm very excited to suggest that the 9/11 Truth Movement was very excited to show millions of people in New York this video of Building 7 coming down in Times Square and a 30 or 40 foot tall wrap around the corner building there. People don't know. Our huge campaign was dedicated to raising awareness in the public. And it says, did you know a third tower fell on 9/11? In fact, most architects and engineers know nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history. This is absolutely unprecedented destruction of a skyscraper by fire. We've never had such a thing since or after, before or after 9/11. But here on 9/11, we have three. And we'll get to the Twin Towers in a minute. But I want your listeners to really understand that we're talking about a 47-story skyscraper, easily the tallest building in most of our states. And this building, after witnesses hear explosions at 5:20 in the afternoon, this building drops like a rock suddenly, symmetrically, and at free fall acceleration. That means not one of the 82 columns in this building gave any resistance. And that is proof in and of itself for the explosive removal or demolition of those columns. Also, the fact that the building comes straight down, it doesn't fall over, indicates that all 82 columns were destroyed at once, i.e. within a fraction of a second of each other. Do you think, or any of your listeners, or any of the professors at NJIT, do they imagine that those columns could be removed all at once by normal office fires? The stated reason of NIST's so-called scientific analysis of this building's collapse. No, it's absolutely ludicrous what they come up with, which involves expansion, thermal expansion of large span beams, pushing a girder off of its seat on this one column called column 79, causing the internal cascading failure vertically through this building and then translating horizontally. All that happens in just seconds before then what they describe as the overall building collapsing straight down into its own footprint in under 7 seconds.
Crazy. Totally crazy. But, you know, anybody who saw that, anybody who witnessed that at all, no matter where they were on TV or, you know, there itself, I can't believe anybody could doubt that it was a professionally demolished building, you know. I can't believe it, especially if you're from New York and you've seen so many buildings go down, you know, that way, it's beyond belief to me.
Well, that's the thing. It looks exactly like an explosive controlled demolition, and yet,
and
this
you
didn't
have,
even
yeah.
this didn't even
you have the you
they
have
didn't,
Silverstein
they didn't.
Yeah, you have Silverstein admitting on television in an interview.
Hold on. Hold on. We'll get back to Silverstein.
Sure.
NIST didn't even look.
I'm ahead of myself here, I guess.
NIST did not even look at the hypothesis of explosive demolition. In fact, they were charged by Congress with explaining how these buildings came down due to office fires, or
right.
And in the case of the Twin Towers, due to jet fuel. And yet, and they say, they actually acknowledge, they, after claiming they never found any evidence for explosive demolition, they acknowledge that they never looked for it, and they in writing. So this is incredible. And yet, fires, their official cause and their first hypothesis and only hypothesis, have never brought down a skyscraper ever. And these fires in Building 7 were few, small, and scattered.
Amazing. And they had, and they found thermite actually in the basement.
Let's discuss that. I mean, you're talking about structural engineers, the cleanup workers, the iron workers, and the first responders. They're all talking about finding pools of molten steel, they call it, in the case of World Trade Center structural engineer himself. Leslie Robertson is down there, and he says a river of steel flowing. Another first responder says flowing like lava from a volcano.
Wow.
This is we have dozens of these witnesses appearing in our video, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. And they are
I saw it. In fact, I want to tell you, I posted it on my website. Actually, I posted it up on 9/11 this year in memory of it. And it's a great video, by the way. Very good.
Thank you. Well, also, it's very important. It's not just these credible groups of individuals that find all this evidence. It's pouring out of the South Tower 10 minutes prior to its collapse, this yellow liquid like flowing out of a volcano. It's clearly not aluminum or anything else. It's glowing yellow, which is indicates temperatures exceeding what these other materials can get to. Molten iron or steel. Now, I'll answer that question. Hold on one second. The evidence for molten iron is documented very carefully by FEMA in their Appendix C of their report that came out in May of 2002. They say they do a metallurgical analysis on the few remaining pieces from World Trade Center 7 of structural steel, the rest having been illegally destroyed and sent to China for recycling. But
didn't they turn it into the USS Bush or something? They turned all that, supposedly all the scrap iron was turned into some aircraft carrier or something, or destroyer or whatever it was.
It was a
battleship. Remember that? Yeah, I mean, it's they took everything was taken out within like a matter of, I don't know, 48 or as fast as they possibly can without anybody being able to examine it.
But
you know,
but it takes 2,800 2,800 degrees to melt iron or steel. Where does that kind of temperature come from? These office fires, even in the case of the Twin Towers, the jet fuel. It doesn't even get 500, 1,000 degrees. We're talking temperatures exceeding that by 3 or 4 times. What can do that? Well, thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. It issues molten iron as its byproduct at 4,000 degrees, which can explain this phenomena where nothing else makes sense to do it. In fact, what's found by the U.S. Geological Survey in their toxicological studies in all the World Trade Center dust is these iron-rich microspheres, previously molten iron microspheres, found up to 6% of the dust samples. This is incredible because they have no explanation of how they got there, and yet it's a signature component of the World Trade Center dust. Well, this how would you get iron microspheres the diameter of a human hair comprising up to 6% of the volume of these dust samples? It's pretty amazing because if you had thermite cutter charges laced throughout the columns and beams in these buildings, And under explosive conditions, that thermite releasing liquid molten iron would be aerosolized by the under these pressures, and it would cool and form in it would fall in spheres because that's what liquid does when it's aerosolized.
Right.
It turns into a sphere because of the surface tension, and it cools and falls with all the dust. It's a natural, simple explanation as to how they got there in the dust, and yet they provide no explanation whatsoever. But they thoroughly document this. R.J. Lee, in fact, an environmental concern firm, also documents it very well. And not only that, but a small team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen finds in their four independently collected samples that they find very high-tech form of thermite called nanothermite in these small red-gray chips. And in fact, they zoom in, 50,000 times with an electron microscope. They find these red-gray chips are composed of iron oxide and aluminum powder, the key ingredients of thermite. When they put them in a heater, they ignite, and they produce what? The same exact spheres that are found in all the World Trade Center dust by the USGS. So we know where those spheres came from, in fact, this nanothermite material.
But now I know that you presented it, and I know that you've done stuff. I mean, the world has been aware of this now because of your research for some time. But what is happening to it? I mean, is there a possibility of reopening this the 911 investigation or no?
Well, we certainly hope so. It'll take quite a will on the part of the American people to look at the evidence, become aware of it.
Were you encouraged at what Donald Trump said about 9/11?
Donald Trump was said to have said a lot of things about 9/11 that he did not say. There is an article out that says that he called for a new investigation of Building 7. This is not the case.
He didn't call for an investigation. He questioned it. I saw him. I saw the speech that he did, and just like he questioned McCain's military record, he could, his hero worthiness. He questioned the Jeb George Bush's involvement in 9/11. And he was going after Jeb Bush on that one, but he brought that to the surface about a month ago. And
yes, he's questioning whether Jeb Bush kept us safe or not. That's right.
Yeah, and he wouldn't, and whether Jeb Bush backed up his brother, so it was like. It was the first. I mean, he brought up he was the one to bring up the birther issue, right? And that stung Obama pretty well. And then he brought up 9/11, and he's brought up a lot of stuff, and which I've cited on my website because I so enjoy the comments that he makes are things that we all see, but are denying. You know, like for instance, Ben Carson's, demeanor, okay, the guy looks like he's on Valium, serious loads of Valium, but then when you hear that he had a very violent temper as a child and as a teenager, and threatened and tried to kill somebody, that he had to have been sedated in some way to get through life, with that kind of problem.
Well, I'm glad that Trump is talking about 9/11. I'm very glad. I mean, somebody needs to be talking about it.
That's why I think it's so important that when he brings it out, suddenly the world goes to research it. You know what I mean? Or check out what he's trying to say. And
I hope that's
the value of Trump in this debate, in this election.
It's a high value. He's a loose cannon, and we need loose cannons, people who speak.
Yeah, you do. He's like Ross Perot was, He's like, like everybody, But he brings things to the surface, and he makes them
heard. And I mean, not that everybody cares for his demeanor, but at the same time, you can't help but laugh at the guy. He's an entertainer.
Well, I wrote him a letter. I wrote him a letter a month ago, and I encouraged him to look at the DVD that we sent him, which was all about the explosive destruction of the World Trade Center skyscraper on 9/11.
Yeah.
And he wrote back. He said, his campaign manager wrote back and said, we'll look at it. And I was, you know, that's a presidential candidate, a serious one, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was great to have that feedback. There's a reason we have 2,750 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation. And we've got the credibility that is needed for people to take it, take our website, ae911truth.org. That's ae911truth.org. That link should go to every architect and engineer that your listeners can find and everybody else that they know, because American people need to know what really happened on 9/11. This was a major scam in which Americans were fooled, and we were manipulated into going to war and giving up our civil liberties through legislation and executive orders. Now any of us can be arrested, thrown in jail without being charged, without a right to a lawyer, a trial, a jury, and indefinitely. We can even be tortured and even assassinated. All this is, quote, legal by current measures.
Yeah, and anything imaginable. But, you know, I just read today that there are 27 Republican senators. I think it was 27 Republican senators that voted for the torture bill to allow. Have you heard about that? They support torture, okay, and they support the torture bill, and for prisoners in Guantanamo or wherever, and. Just brutal bastards, you know, that you can't talk them out of it, you know.
Right.
Don't talk sense to these people. You know, they know torture is against the Geneva Convention. They know it's against every human, right that exists. And yet, you know, they don't care. You know, they don't care.
Well, all of this started back on 9/11, and they've gotten their justification for a $4.5 trillion war because of what happened on 9/11, and most specifically because of what happened at the World Trade Center, which is shown in the case of the Twin Towers that they are it's very clear that they are also controlled demolitions. Let me walk you through the evidence if I can. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
And I think the most amazing thing about 9/11, though, is the it just goes back to Goebbels, who said, "Tell the biggest lie you can possibly tell, and that way they'll believe you, because will believe that it could be true."
That's right, and that seems
the Reichstag, you know. And
that's right. It's a
terrorist, and then they blew it. Yeah, terrorism. You know, their terrorist attacks were what allowed Hitler to gain power, and then Nazis.
That's right.
But
and people believe it because they don't want to imagine that such an evil could be true. And we were on 9/11, first in the morning, with respect to the Twin Towers. I'll just take you step by step, I can have the floor for a minute, through
Absolutely.
This evidence.
No,
it's really important that your listeners understand these concepts. We were told, for instance, by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that these buildings came down due to jet plane impacts and fires, and the resulting, of course, jet fuel fires. Most of that jet fuel burned up outside the building. The rest of it burned up within 10 minutes, and that's according to NIST. So we're just talking about igniting a fire. It's all that it really did. It didn't melt steel beams. It didn't even soften them. It's the fires that they said softened these structural steel elements. And that because the airplanes were said to have knocked off the fireproofing. Well, we won't argue about that. What we're arguing about is NIST theory that says when the structure failed, in the case of the North Tower, this 15-story section drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. Now, this is a theory that came out in a 12-page paper by Zdenek Brzant. It came out 2 days after 9/11. Incredible.
He must have laughed. I mean, a guy like that must be a laughingstock amongst the profession, isn't he?
Well, I would hope so, but
does this guy have any credibility at all?
The entire NIST theory is completely resting on this guy, and in 2 days, this incredible theory was produced. Obviously, it would have taken months to pull this together beforehand. Anyway, the point is that there is no 15-story section seen in any of the photos or videos that's shown at all, any part of it, driving the rest of the building down. What happens is in the first 4 seconds, that 15-story block is destroying itself. Very similar, actually, to Building 7. Looks exactly like a controlled demolition. It's telescoping down. Its complete structural steel skeleton is shattered. It's turned basically into a liquid. And what's happening after that is after 156 witnesses now on record in the oral histories by the commissioner, Fire Chief Commissioner Thomas Von Essen, he talks he had these first responders talk and they're recorded, and out of 500 of them totally, 156 of them are talking about sounds of explosions, hearing them, being blown around inside the building, experiencing them, and seeing flashes of light. So what happens at this onset of destruction after all these witnesses, none of which, by the way, appear in any of the final reports of the NIST, what happens is there's these series of explosions, they say like a belt wrapping all the way around the building, these synchronized explosions, pop, 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 pop. Dozens of these witnesses are describing exactly that, after which we see the lateral ejection at 60 miles an hour of 4-ton structural steel sections landing 600 feet in every direction. I mean, gravity works.
I know. It was amazing. It was just an amazing, crazy-looking thing to watch. And
we would expect in a gravitational collapse to see, or a pancaking collapse, to see 110 floors at the bottom of each of the towers. But we don't see one. These are an acre in size, 4-inch thick concrete, 90,000 tons of concrete pulverized in midair, which would take incredible explosive force, and that's exactly what we see coming out of the middle of the Twin Towers during its 12-second destruction. In less than a dozen seconds, actually, the entire structural steel skeleton is completely shattered from top to bottom, leaving only a 2-story pile of core columns, perimeter columns, other materials, not 20, 30 stories of gravitational collapse, which is what we'd expect. And so we also see on the way down these isolated explosive ejections, which are very clearly explosions occurring at 160 feet per second, some of them 200 feet per second. Even 20 or 40 or 60 stories down below the massive zone of destruction, this mushroom-shaped cloud with laterally ejected structural steel elements following, trailed by thick white clouds, which is, again, a byproduct of an exothermic reaction like thermate, which produces aluminum oxide dust or gas in its wake. These things look like rockets flying out the side of the Twin Towers.
Yeah, I watched the movie. You know what I was shocked at, though, quite frankly, is that if if you said that you had sent that to Trump's campaign, and I believe he probably did watch it for him to make that statement publicly, that there, I think if he ever got elected, all right, he may have that investigated again, you know, which would be a wonderful thing. And that way, he could put the Bush family, in their grave. You know what I mean? That would be a wonderful thing. And I don't think he has any love for them anyway. But and then what Obama did to me, the greatest criminal act that Obama did in his administration was pardon the Bush administration, you know, for war crimes that they committed. And it's just unbelievable. And all that stuff was there, and he knew it. But and then he turns out to be just as bad as Bush was, you know, in the long run. So yeah, hopefully you need a guy like maybe Trump will come in, and you know, I mean, God knows Hillary won't do anything, you know. So
yeah, I just don't know enough about politics to share on that. But guess what I found, Leo? I found the location where we're going to be in Torrington on Saturday, November 14th at 7 p.m. The Trinity Episcopal Church. That's at 220 Prospect Street in Torrington, Connecticut. And so we're looking forward to seeing people come. And if anybody has any questions, they can call Bob. That's a tough email. But Bob can be reached at 845. I can't even say his last name. His phone number, though, is 845-926-6697. That's 845-926-6697.
And his name is Bob?
Yeah.
He's the organizer of the meeting?
Yeah, of the local event. What we're doing, Leo, is premiering our new film. It's called Firefighters, Architects, Engineers Expose 9/11 Myths. And we take 20 different myths that's put out by the government, the media, commonly held by people, and we expose it and provide all this evidence for explosive demolition and talk about the fraudulent report that NIST is responsible for.
Is Bob a firefighter, or what is his?
I don't know what his background is, but he is organizing it.
There are some guys in Torrington. I know. In fact, there was one guy who was the head of that group. Oh boy, they were big on 911, but it was the. You don't hear about them much anymore. But about a couple of years ago, they were quite strong. They were guys that were going, asking questions and going in the face of politicians and stuff and putting it on YouTube.
We Are Change.
We Are Change. Thank you very much. I forgot.
Yeah, yeah.
I had their guy on. I think his name was Bob Russell.
Luke,
I think or
Luke Luke Rutkowski. Luke Rutkowski.
Luke Rutkowski is the guy's name. All right.
Yeah.
So is he involved with that group at all or no?
Yeah, he sure is. WeareChange.org. You can see those interviews.
He is involved with them. Great.
But back to this premiere, it's really important that people see it because here we have the founder of Firefighters for 9/11 Truth. His name is Eric Lawyer. He was a Seattle firefighter. He and I were on the platform together going back and forth. He covered the National Fire Protection Association Manual 921, NFPA 921, which governs the investigation of fire and explosion, fire and explosions. And that manual was completely violated. It's guidelines for investigations. And NIST actually helped to write this manual. So he goes through and shows how, you know, we have the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene.
Yeah.
We have not following standard fire investigative procedures, preservation of evidence. It goes on and on.
It was really incredible. Yeah, it was so screwed up. And I think the most offensive thing to me, the most offensive, was Rudy Giuliani's mandate that nobody could wear respirators down there. Wasn't that not the most horrible thing? And then Whitney Todd Whitman there came out and said the air was perfectly clear. Now they verified that. You know, I remember this organization from New York, downtown New York and Brooklyn or wherever in the area. They said that the air quality was like Drano, okay?
Yeah,
just like Drano.
Right.
And that was for like well over a week or more. Okay, after that happened, and even the great what's his name? The Irish guy that used to write for the this is a terrible memory. He was a famous columnist, Irish columnist for the New York Post or whatever it was that he wrote for. And Jimmy Breslin, remember him?
No.
The Jimmy Breslin?
No.
You don't remember him? Well, Jimmy Breslin
No.
was a very, very well-known columnist. And I believe he wrote for the Daily Post or the Daily News or something. I can't remember where. But he, well-known. But he claimed that, you know, he died a few years later, but a few years ago, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago. But he died of 911-related bronchial cancer, you know, lung cancer. And he said that he was very close to when it happened, when the thing fell. And I remember him complaining that it was affecting him and affecting everybody in New York City, you know, many, many people. And but 2 years ago, you must have heard about this. 2 years ago, they came out with a settlement of $650 million for the first responders suit, class action suit against the state of New York. You remember that one?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, when that happened, and that I felt great about that when that happened, because I've been covering this with people for like yourself. And even we even had David Ray Griffin on right when he first published his book, you know, New Pearl Harbor, back in 2003. And it's like everything we've done, we've followed this case right up through you. And I think you started. When did you start your organization, Richard?
2009.
Yeah, because I had you on the. I remember having you on the air. On my FM show as well, at least a couple of times, during from 2009 to 2011. And we talked about that. But you actually started your organization in 2009, and that was 5 or 6 years after, or more, eight years after the actual thing happened. Why did it take you so long to recognize that or to be able to see or speak out on that? Community.
Let me clarify what I just said.
Sure.
In 2009, I went full-time. I couldn't work as an architect anymore. There's just no time. I was traveling around the country and even around the world.
Right. I know
you
put tremendous effort into this.
But we started Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth in 2006 when I heard it was actually David Ray Griffin on the radio, and he was talking about these 156, 118 at the time, firefighters hearing all these explosions.
That's correct.
It had just come out in August of 2005, but here in 2006 in May, David Ray Griffin was being interviewed by Bonnie Faulkner on KPFA in Berkeley. I was shocked. I mean, I literally had to pull my car over and listen to the rest of this interview. It was so startling.
Yeah, it was riveting.
I had never even heard of an alternative theory about how these towers came down. And I'm going, these guys are total conspiracy theorists. I mean, how
really?
Could this be true? But he didn't, you know, he was making sense, rational sense. B, he didn't sound like, you know, somebody that would be, you know, having an agenda or lying or something. So I listened to him. And I just turned my world upside down. Until that point, I was a flag-waving Republican. I was rooting for Colin Powell as he went in to make his indisputable case before the United Nations as to getting – yep, that was me going into Iraq and get those bastards, you know, who helped Osama bin Laden.
I'm sorry for you.
Thanks. Yeah, well, it shows you
how we were in the trenches down there, and we were in the trenches in D.C. trying to, you know, you're getting sprayed by tularemia and stuff, you know, for these bastards. Back in 2005, that anti-war rally down there, there was almost 500,000 people there in September of 2005, and all the biosensors went off in Washington, D.C. You realize that? All the biosensors that were designed to protect D.C. from a bioweapons attack, right? Well, all of them went off, all six of them in those areas, and they all went off from detecting tularemia, all right? And that was announced by the Washington Post, which is where I found it, which was a day or two after the event happened, which I was there, all right? And the CDC put out a warning, all right? And it was just phenomenal. And the press had very, very, very little coverage except for my own programs. I was at television then, and as well. And I put out a full documentary on that and a health warning to the entire state of Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York regarding that. And that's where my radio and TV shows resonated or were heard and seen. And there was only one other, and that was a guy named Bob Firkakis. He's an attorney out in Ohio, I believe, and he had a free press, and he published it as well, and we were one of the only two or possibly three publishers who actually went after it, you know, and I talked about it like crazy on my radio shows, because I mean, there's nothing worse than being betrayed by your own you know, your own country, you know, being sprayed and killed, you know, with a bioweapon, you know. And, you know, so many people were sick after that rally as well, even though they didn't know that they were sprayed, but they all came, many, many, many people I was traveling with came back, you know, very sick, you know, flu-like symptoms, which is exactly what tularemia develops, you know, causes. So, anyway, I know I went on there, but we were, everybody... And that I knew, okay, in my circles anyway, and broadcasts were vehemently against the Bush and the war, and we were one of the first radio shows to actually promote the 9/11 conspiracy. We, believe it or not, we were the first radio show that had David Ray Griffin on. His very first interview was with us, and when we published that. He published the book, and we got the galley proof from his publisher and publicist, and we had him on. In fact, the night that we had him on, he was just retiring from Santa Clara College, where he was a theologian, it was a fascinating interview for him. It was the first one he ever did, which was great. But that was and it went on, and his book was riveting for me when I read it, and I couldn't wait to talk to him. But yeah, again, everything got kind of tarnished there. The Bush administration, the CIA, the FBI, everybody got their medals of freedom, awards for 9/11. It just got all whitewashed. Unbelievable. But I'm so glad you're still fighting it, and hopefully though something good will come of that. But you're seeing your audiences. How are they responding now? Are they better, or
yeah,
still very
our audiences have always responded well. Once people actually look at the information, whether we're presenting a film like in Torrington or whether we're doing a live presentation like we've done 400 times in 37 countries and 85 American cities now, people by a show of hands, those who didn't agree with us or who were unsure, almost all of them are moved into the camp where they agree with the evidence for controlled demolition and calling for a new investigation. So that's the people who actually look at the information. It's the people who don't or are unwilling to, who can't imagine that such a thing could be true. So why spend the time looking at it? Those are the people that get the press, get the quotes on the in the mainstream media.
That's correct. No, you're right. And unfortunately, there's still a majority of people are still getting their news that way from the mainstream, and it just doesn't seem like we can. It's helping. I mean, things are coming. Things are changing. Dramatically, I believe, in this last year. And people are opening up to conspiracies like this that have been going for 10 years now, or 15 years. So, I feel positive that my own work, for instance, is beginning to go viral on my own website and my writings that go back to 2004 and cover all of these issues. But the Bush years and the Iraq War and everything from those that period, and backed by archive radio shows, so I feel that truth is eventually coming out, and there's so many other like Rents.com Alex Jones and David Icke and people like that who were the beginning, were the people with the websites and the radio shows at the beginning that were questioning all these conspiracies, and they're still around, and they're still all doing strong, and I'm so glad you're still around and still going at it, and I hope we can give you as much support as possible,
And I appreciate the interview today because Torrington is right in the middle of our effort here, and so I hope people will come out and look at the information, get the information, and get our new 50-page booklet called Beyond Misinformation, has been distributed 40,000 copies out there now in just a month. So
your funding? How are you funding your mission here? The cost?
We have
donations, all donations, or are there? To be able to tour 37 countries, that's quite a.
Well, people will call us and they'll say, "Can you come? In England and." This is how the summer tour, in which we had 21 different stops in 38 days. This is how it happened. So we got a couple of calls. We start to put together a tour. We call, our supporters in different countries.
Right.
And we say, hey, we're going to be in England. Do you want us to stop over in Germany? And we went to Rome this summer also. Had a great presentation with the former Supreme Court leader of that country the current honorary president, Judge Impasamato. He came and spoke also with us there, and Giulietto Chiesa, the author of Zero, the movie. Very, very... And it's amazing how many, millions of people support the call for the truth about 9/11, realizing that we were not.
Oh, there are. It's tremendous. Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's just you can't get it into the mainstream media.
There's a serious black curtain of censorship in mainstream media.
And
that's
and
really
they call
true.
You crazy if you pursue it. I mean, you know, it's really getting bad out there. I have to say that I do believe it.
But
they're calling conspiracy people, 911 people, crazy. You know, they're calling them mentally ill. All right,
that's
and
right.
labeling them as kooks. Unfortunately, there was a guy that was pulled off a plane the other day, saying that, you know, calling out 911 was fixed. 911, you know, the guy was some kind of, he was a little crazy, but they pulled him off an airplane the other day. But the problem is that he's, you know, when you really began to analyze it, and when you saw all the data and you listened and you interviewed all the people that we did, and you knew in your gut that this was all wrong, this was horrible, and you know, and you couldn't, I guess what it was you couldn't believe how diabolical and horribly evil the Bush administration was, okay, and the you know what they did, it just beyond any kind of human compassion, any kind of human thought. It was just sheer greed and power and, greed and power, you know. I don't even know, I can't even think of anything good, okay, that could say about it. I mean, when you think that Donald Rumsfeld resigned in disgrace, okay, in 2006 because of his invasion, because he said that to the Congress that they would be, it would cost $60 billion and be out in 90 days, okay, in and out, all right? And the Congress approved it, right? Well, what does it take? 10 years, $4 trillion, and it's still going on, you know? And thousands and thousands of wasted lives. And you know, when you realize that, when you come to grips with how evil this country can be to its own people, how diabolical they are, you know, in their pursuit of power and empire, it's just, you know, staggering. It's just staggering, and you almost want to cower in disbelief, you know. And do you feel that way, or did it strike you that way, or no? Just
well,
want to strike out or what?
I want to wake people up, because the root of all of this, what you're talking about, is it all started with 9/11. And the smoking
that's
gun
right.
of 9/11 is Building 7. And that's
right.
why we always start with Building 7. There's no way that a skyscraper can fall symmetrically at free fall acceleration in under 7 seconds due to normal office fires. And a child gets this.
He says, we pulled it. We pulled the building. Right there, you
so
said
here's
it on,
the,
on that documentary. We pulled
so
it.
So here's the owner of World Trade Center Building 7,
yeah.
who 6 weeks prior to 9/11 purchased all the
all
other
the leases,
six.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hold on, let me finish. Who purchased the other six buildings just 6 weeks prior to 9/11, put massive
right.
terrorist insurance on it, and of course, with a whole only $125 million of his own money, ends up with the entire complex and a $5.68 billion. Hold on, I'm not done.
Yeah.
So he ends up with $5.68 billion in his pocket. So
yeah.
A year after 9/11, he's being interviewed on PBS, and they say, you know, tell us about this. What happened to this Building 7? And he says, well, there's been such terrible loss of life. I was talking to the fire commander, and he said, maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And so they gave the order to pull, and we watched the building come down.
That's right.
So we know
that it takes a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks to prepare a building that size.
Oh, it takes months.
Dozens
of operators.
And so
we're not talking about
in hours, you know.
We're not talking about getting into a burning building and setting explosives.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. So obviously this is
how about the beauty of that one was the BBC report that said Building 7 has fallen, and it was standing behind the reporter.
The BBC
reported
the BBC,
it 10 minutes before it fell. Yeah.
The BBC announced the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it even collapsed, and they even gave the reason for its collapse. This is absolutely extraordinary.
You could see the building right behind them. Yeah,
that's right. So they say they apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. Well, does that make them psychic or something?
Yeah,
hey, Leo, my apologies, but I have a situation developing here. I've got to run. I wanted to thank you so much for having us.
I want to thank you. By the way, I just wanted to tell you, if you want, you can embed this whole interview, this whole show, on your own site. If you want to do that, feel free to do that. You can go right in and embed it. There's an embedding thing there, and then you just take out the code and put it right on your site.
Thank you very much, and we'll catch up with you later. See you in Torrington.
Thank you so much. I hope to see you in Torrington.
All right, Leo. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. And that was Richard Gage, the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And he is going to be at the Trinity Church in Torrington, Connecticut, on Prospect Street on Saturday. And for more information about that and about his incredible mission here to educate the world on 9/11, go to a-e-911truth.org, and you will see a whole eye full of incredible information there, and also you'll see his video as well. And you can actually go to my own site, my own website, look in the September archives, and you will see the 9/11 their Architects and Engineers documentary. It's an hour long documentary on 9/11 and interviews hundreds of people and architects, engineers, experts in the field, and just a great movie. He also has a new movie out that he's showing now on all these different engagements. But I think if you go to ANE911truth.org, you can see his entire agenda of his travel, of his tour. And I hope you do. And good night, everybody. I hope you had a good evening. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night right here. Good night, everybody.